If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program. Good to have your company at the official start. Today is actually the start of Easter, not because the school break has begun this afternoon, but because it's Maundy Thursday. Have you heard of Maundy Thursday? I call myself a Catholic and I'd never heard of Maundy Thursday. Well, it comes from the UK because Maundy money was given out by the monarch on Holy Thursday, on this day. So Maundy money is where that name comes from. But more importantly, it commemorates the Last Supper of Jesus Christ with his disciples. And this is where he instituted the sacrament of Holy Communion and washed the feet of his disciples, which is a sign of service and humility. So that is the first day of Easter. And can I just say, if you're traveling today, so many people are, or they get an early start on Good Friday, take it easy, really take it easy. Back right off from the speed limit because too many people die. We see it each and every year. Too many people don't come back from the beginning of their holidays. Way too many. Shortly, the chief green evangelists came out today to make another outrageous promise for Australia. The Australian Prime Minister and the Climate Change Minister unveiled plans for the manufacturing of solar panels in the Hunter Valley. That's all you do. You just rip out the coal-fired power stations, put in the manufacturing factories, you put in solar panel factories, and off you go. It's that simple, you know? What could go wrong? How do you think this grand plan will end up, do you think? Especially when you consider that Australia is moving away from any manufacturing, quick, smart. Later in the show, I'll speak with economist Dr. Alan Moran, who will unpack the pros and cons of Australia embarking on a solar panel manufacturing sector. Now, we do have a small number of solar panels made. We make up about 1% of the solar panel manufacturing business in the world, 1%. But the only way this works is that you take up the difference between what the Chinese make these solar panels for and what we will make the solar panels for. That's how it works. It's all about grants, more subsidies. You can make anything look fabulous by giving it free money. One of Australia's leading libertarians will join us on the show today just before he embarks on a trip into rural New South Wales to hear from angry farmers about the rollout of infrastructure, churning through those great alluvial soils to provide a second transmission network for those very expensive windmills. Yes, and the farmers are up in arms in the area of Dubbo, which is why John Ruddick is heading there very, very shortly. We'll discuss that with him and also talk about the Labor government's tough immigration policy. This is a new policy that's now on the table before the other parties. And I've got to say, even members of the opposition have been surprised at how tough Labor has got. I'll go through the details for you shortly. We'll talk about the violence in Alice Springs and what to do, and the decision in Canberra to hold a world-first inquiry into excess deaths. Yes, you heard right. I never thought it was possible. A breakthrough at last. My special guest today will also be one of the most awarded whistleblowers in Australian history, Jeff Morris, OAM. We'll talk about his experience blowing the whistle on the Commonwealth Bank and the financial sector. And he'll talk about those other whistleblowers. Some of them you know. He is following their path, and he thinks that they should be treated far better than what they're being treated like. And I couldn't agree more. I often wonder how many people in a workplace at some stage contemplate blowing the whistle, especially on their management or the way a particular business is structured and the things that are hidden. And then they think about how whistleblowers are being treated in Australia at the moment and think, nah, I'll let someone else do the dirty work. I'm not doing it. I wonder whether so many businesses and corporations get away with blue murder because it's just not worth the while of whistleblowers to come clean. Plus, we've got our talkback lines. As you know, if you've got something on your chest you'd like to get it off, Well, do so by ringing one of our numbers on the talkback line from the United States and Canada. It is 1-888. That's right, 1-888-201-6425. I thought I'd said an extra eight then. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. And from Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Let's get into this. You're with Chris Smith, broadcasting live on the Global News Talk Network, TNT.
Talk that matters.
For once, we just need to do what's best for this damn country and not what's best for the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, I've got a friend in town at the moment, a friend from Washington, D.C., as a matter of fact, a former workmate from our days working together in radio in Beijing. And we had a conversation this week about the government, the fact that there was a big election coming up in the early part of 2025. And we were talking about the Prime Minister's performance and the fact that he was waylaid by focusing far too much on a voice to Parliament. And this friend of mine, she said she thought he'd begun electioneering already. And that was just after being in the country for 3 or 4 days. And she just went over a few things that she was observing and said, he's electioneering. And it sort of hit a note with me. We spoke about Albo's predilection to attend red carpet and pop events. You think about what he's done since the beginning of January. Have you noticed this? And then all of a sudden, one of the columnists at the Sydney Morning Herald, the Labor-friendly Sydney Morning Herald, made a few points in this regard as well, and I couldn't resist raising it today. Sean Carney pointed to Albo's freebie attending a Taylor Swift show in Sydney. Remember he did that? He got a freebie there and off he went. That was on this month. And there was that private Katy Perry gig at a Melbourne mansion that got coverage as well. He, of course, is renowned for his front row appearances with a bunch of wealthy worthies, as Sean writes, at the Australian Open men's tennis final. Interestingly, though, when he turned up to the final, he was roundly booed by the crowd. And I've always said that if you are a prime minister and you start to get booed at sporting events, you're a goner at the next election. I've seen it before. I'm just saying. Just saying. Carney writes about Albo's celebrity status and highlights how every man Albo burned through his political capital by pinning his reputation on the failed referendum on The Voice. He lost a lot of bark in that exercise. All last year, while most Australians fried under the cost of scorcher, cost of living crisis, he lost trust. And I'm not just saying that as an observation. I'm saying it because it's starting to materialise in some of the polls recently. The Resolve poll, for instance, saw him having a net approval rating of -11%. Which is why they've gone very, very hard on this new detainee deportation legislation, immigration legislation, banning people from entering Australia, even as tourists, if their nations refuse to take back those illegal human and criminal trash that we end up having to cart around, the ones that we recently released following a High Court decision. So the public is marking Labor down badly for their mishandling of the borders, and so they're trying to come back big time to make up lost ground. If you're not good on borders, think of what's happened in recent history. You can lose elections. And here's another example of ineptitude from today's bright idea unveiled in the Hunter Valley. To placate the region's angry miners, Albo goes up to the Hunter Valley, announces a $1 billion program to help Australian companies manufacture solar panels. Here he is today.
We have the best solar resources in the world up above us, and they're free. We have some of the best wind resources. We have also the best human resources. Australia has been world leading at innovation. PV solar, created at places like the University of New South Wales, the Australian National University, has seen the breakthroughs that have led the world. But we have not been good at commercialising those opportunities. We've created the innovation and then seen all the value being added offshore. And today we have around about 90% of the world's solar panels produced in just one country, China, and then exported to around the world. We missed the opportunities. We are not going to miss the opportunities of this generation.
You reckon? You reckon? Now, he's calling this his Buy Australia campaign, which is extremely unoriginal. And he thinks more jobs will be created by manufacturing solar panels than turning coal into cheap baseload power at the Liddell Power Station. Huh? What a dumb comparison to make. What's that mean? Firstly, an infinitesimal number of specialised miners will find a job making solar panels. And the miners I've spoken to at various sites in New South Wales in the last 2 years, they are over the Labor Party and over their green evangelism and ideology. They've lost their careers. Those solar panels also do not contribute to the $66 billion in export revenue we received last financial year. $66 billion is soon to disappear. How do we pay for healthcare? How do we pay for education? Not from solar panels. And three, does he really think Australia can compete with the slave labour force in China, which is why they've got 90% of the market and Australia has one? Of course not. The cost price of Aussie panels will be at least 20 to 25 times more than the same Chinese product. You do your due diligence on that one. But in Albo's world, you see, that doesn't matter. That's easy solved. You just get taxpayers, you, to subsidise the massive difference in price. Prop it up artificially with big grants and just send us further into massive debt. That's what you do. That's what he's doing. Maybe we could make everything that China makes for 20 times the cost and then just get the taxpayer to pick up the difference. What a weird, weird economic world that would be. It wouldn't take long before the country became one of Paul Keating's banana republics, broke in administration, an inflation basket case, able to sell bananas and not much else. And watch a first world country, if that were to happen in every sector, watch a first world country become a third world country almost overnight. I'm sorry. It is dumb economics. We don't produce things that China produces because they do it far more cheaply. It is inefficient to take them on at their own game when they've got slave labor working for them. What about that doesn't he understand? It is unsustainable. Australia is signing its own economic suicide note going down by this track, and Albo's mob think they're saving the planet. And we know that scientifically, factually, that is complete bulldust. This is TNT.
TNT's James Freeman.
Now that I'm sitting on the other side of the fence, I see the budget in a very different light. I find the discussions and leaks in the press in the weeks running up to the budget totally patronising. You know, will he, won't he give us some tax cuts? When the reality is that nothing in the budget will make any material difference to anyone, pretty much. That's usually the story. It is a game of musical chairs where the government giveth with one hand and taketh with the other, and we're all reminded about how little money that we've got left in our pockets.
James Freeman on today's News Talk TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's news talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Hey, good to have your company. We do this each and every Thursday. We check in with the Libertarian champion of Australia at the moment, the New South Wales leader of the Libertarian Party himself, the member for the Legislative Council representing the Libertarian Party, John Ruddick. Welcome back to TNT.
Good afternoon, Chris. Good to see you, mate.
Now, I understand that you are heading off into the wild blue yonder later this afternoon. You're heading to the central western town of Dubbo in New South Wales. What's out there to be seen?
Well, going to have a little bit of a family holiday at the Western Plains Zoo, of course, which will be fun. But I'm mainly going out there because the state government has designated five geographical regions of New South Wales of what they call these renewable energy zones. Now, they're going out there and they're saying to these farmers, and these are the farms that keep us all alive, Chris, as you know.
Yeah.
They're throwing around millions of dollars to these farmers, and they're saying, well, we want to sort of take over part of your farm to build wind farms and solar farms and transmission lines. Now, a lot of these farmers have had these farms for, you know, five generations. Mm. These are people who are very plugged in with nature, and, you know, they're not real happy about it. This is central planning from on high that the government is imposing on them. You know, all this money floating around, sloshing around, endless money to try and shut them up. Well, a lot of them are very unhappy about it, and I'm going to go out there and have a look at it with my own eyes.
Isn't that interesting? You know, in an urban setup, you couldn't put an extra awning on the side of your house without somehow making an application to an inspector or a council. But you can have a central government decide what's going to go on with your property, how much land you're going to lose in an instant without having any input.
Oh, well, they are pretending to consult, okay? And a lot of these farmers are just sort of, they get coerced into it. Well, that's what they're telling me. I want to go out and find it. Now, this whole plan was actually dreamed up by the Liberal Party when they were in government, when they only lost election a year ago. Excuse me. So the Labor's just implementing what the Liberals put in place. Now the Liberals are pretending that they think it's not a great idea. So we've got these geniuses here in Macquarie Street imposing this stuff. It's a mild version of, you know, the Stalin's great five-year plans.
Yeah.
Did you see in Texas this week, Chris, they had this massive, massive solar farm and a little thing comes along called a hailstorm.
Blows it all up,
endless. So they didn't think about that. Okay, if the private sector was running this renewable energy industry, because it was a real industry, they weren't living off government grants, the private sector would have foreseen, well, you know, once every 5 years we're going to have a bad hailstorm. But the genius politicians and bureaucrats who are trying to engineer a new industry, they just don't, these little things slip their minds. So it was, yeah. I'm skeptical of these things when it's run by politicians and bureaucrats and not business people.
Without a doubt, I'm right with you. And I've seen those pictures from Texas, just complete and utter devastation. All right, the Albanese government's proposed immigration changes. They've startled a few people today. It could see a ban on extended family members and friends from entering Australia, says the Sydney Morning Herald. Under the changes, the immigration minister could prevent foreigners from particular countries from entering, even as tourists, if their home country refuses to accept the return of failed asylum seekers. So Iran, Iraq, Russia, South Sudan and Zimbabwe are the countries most likely to be targeted. In other words, don't take your trash. Your citizens then will be banned from coming to Australia. It's a tough line.
Look, you know, this is good for the Labor Party. Okay, this is I'm in favour of it from what you've outlined and from what I've read this morning. You know, America is a similar country to Australia, but America is more right wing than Australia on most issues. But there is one issue Australia has always been more right wing on, and that is immigration. Okay, and we've always been tough on it. We've militarised our northern border. Okay, if any boats come along, we send out the Royal Australian Navy and we say, go back, you're not coming here. If they do happen to sneak through and they land on Australian soil, we say, okay, off to processing in Nauru, you're not coming to Australia. The great thing is this is supported by Liberal and Labor. This is a bipartisan agreement. And we need to have, look what's happening in Europe, okay, with these people just coming across the Mediterranean and the southern border in the United States. This is going to overwhelm us, okay? Now, I am pro-immigration, Chris. You know, we're still a young country, and you know what we need more than anything else? We need highly skilled people.
Yes.
We need people with trades, and we need people who are going to come here with a lot of entrepreneurial drive, which a lot of most migrants do. Now, the recent migrants to this country over the last sort of 20, 30 years, they are typically middle-class people from China and middle-class people from India. And they come out here and, by and large, they're very good migrants. All they want to do is make money, buy a home, pay off the mortgage, have a few kids, get them educated and have a happy life. Now, that's a lot better than having migrants coming out here who want to get welfare. Okay.
Yep.
Now, we let in about 14,000 refugees a year. These refugees have a very high rate of a lifetime on welfare. Okay. So, you know, that's, you know, I'm up for, we've got to be very, very careful about the refugee program. Okay. And but look, from what I can see, I think Labor's been particularly tough on this immigration thing at the moment, Chris, because the only thing that matters to the Labor Party is re-election. I think they're in such a pickle over this letting the detainees out. And they've all turned out to be, you know, not all of them, but a hell of a lot of them that turned out to be pretty serious criminals. And that's damaging Labor. So I think this is a political move, but it has my support.
Well, let's see if they stick with it. Now, Alice Springs, what a mess this is, mate. It's probably waiting to erupt again. There's now a curfew in place in Alice Springs after Tuesday's riots. But it's the underlying problem of drunken, violent Indigenous youth that the Prime Minister, the government, has to address. That seems to be something they don't want to address.
Yeah, look, it's really heartbreaking. You know, Australia does need a city right in the guts of the country. I mean, it's a hell of a lot of space around them. There needs to be a thriving city right there in the middle. I can't understand why people want to live in Alice Springs. I mean, you look at this, it's one of the most crime-infested cities in the entire world, okay? It's just off the Richter scale. Now, I believe what's happened here, Chris, is two things. What's happened, remember in the 1980s, there was this huge issue about the black deaths in custody.
Yeah.
Bob Hawke had a big royal commission about it. And I think the truth is that prior to that period, the coppers were nasty to Aborigines. I believe that is true. And I believe that they sort of didn't care much about them. They'd get a drunken Aborigine, throw them in the cell, and basically just not care about them, okay? And then sometimes they go and kill themselves.
But we've gone from one extreme to the other extreme now, John, haven't we?
That's what's happened.
Yeah.
So there was this public outcry, rightly so, about the black deaths in custody. Now we've gone to the other extreme, as you say, Chris, where the judges and the coppers are so frightened to put an Aboriginal in jail if they've committed a crime. And, you know, you look at the George Floyd thing in America, okay, where, you know, it's just, you know, all this backlash against the police. Well, look, I'm sorry. The end result of that approach of being soft on crime because of race has now led to this situation where crime's out of control because they think the cops won't lock us up. They don't want to be accused of being called a racist.
Exactly.
So that's the first problem. Now, I think the second problem is all this garbage about Invasion Day and, you know, we want a voice to Parliament and all this Aboriginals are victims and all this endless saying, oh, you know, white man's terrible and, you know, we wrecked up your beautiful utopia before Captain Cook came. And it's just, if you shove it down a group of people's throats that you're a victim, well, they're going to react in a bad way. That's what's happening here. So, there was a time, Chris, when a lot of Aborigines went to church. And that was a good thing for them. And some of the most beautiful people you can ever meet in these little remote towns are really hardcore Christian Aborigines. They don't drink. They have these dry towns.
Yeah, I've been to some of them. They're successful. They're productive.
So Jacinta Price, the magnificent Jacinta Price, was absolutely right. You know, she knows Alice Springs better than any of these politicians or bureaucrats in Canberra. She said, look, we've got to have a booze ban. Now Albanese gets up and says, oh, that's racist. Okay, then they get rid of the booze ban and we just have this unbelievable, disaster in Alice Springs.
And to think that the Northern Territory government, with a problem that size, can substitute police officers with security guards and transit offices is just farcical.
Look, I mean, I reckon it'll be so hard to get a copper in the north with the Northern Territory Police to agree to go and live in Alice Springs. I mean, it's just, I don't know how businesses survive there. It just looks absolutely terrible. So yeah, they need a pretty serious intervention. I'm not. Or when Albanese, when these things hit the headlines, Albanese just says, "Oh well, here's $250 million to solve the problem." Okay, that doesn't do anything.
No.
We have a legal justice system, and we need to that people need to be sent to jail for bad behaviour. That's what needs to happen.
Yeah, we've got to get tough, as well as trying to solve this problem of drunkenness and what responsibility is taken by elders and families within these communities. There are people who are not standing up, parents in particular. I've got to take a quick break for news. John, we'll come back in just a second. I've got the New South Wales leader of the Libertarian Party with me right now, John Rydick, back with him after the news on TNT.
TNT Radio Live.
The station, the first to broadcast.
Breaking news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Anger is mounting in Australia after the federal government rammed digital ID legislation through Parliament without a debate. Russian President Vladimir Putin has once again shot down fear-mongering claims in the West that Moscow's gearing up for a wider war in Europe. And tensions are rising between Paris and Washington, with the White House reportedly worried that French President Emmanuel Macron could soon trigger a clash with Russia.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, back to John Rydick from the New South Wales Libertarian Party. Rebecca Barnett, who I have on this program often, John, a terrific journalist out of WA, has reported yesterday that the Australian Senate voted to establish a parliamentary inquiry into the nation's excess deaths, giving the green light to what is possibly the first inquiry of its nature in the world. 1 year and five motions is what it took Senator Ralph Babette of the United Australia Party to finally get the go-ahead. His fourth motion calling for the Senate to acknowledge the need for an inquiry scraped through with a win, marking a shift in attitude within the Senate and paving the way for today's vote, that is yesterday, to finally establish an inquiry. It won't be an inquiry the size of which we need, but boy, oh boy, what a great positive step this is.
Well done to Senator Babette, fifth time's the charm, I think he said. And it's also nice to see the Liberals and the National Party doing the right thing on this occasion.
Yeah.
Okay, now, on this subject of the excess deaths, as you know, Chris, from the very beginning, I said I wasn't going to take the COVID vaccine, okay? So I've been a skeptic. I never thought about it. I always knew it was too rushed. I was just on principle, since they wanted to force it on me, I said, well, I'm not going to take it. Anyway, There were people in the sort of anti-COVID vax movement, not many, but there were some people who were predicting a billion deaths by now. That's what, didn't happen. Thank God they were wrong, okay? Now, but so that said, there has been, particularly in the countries that took a lot of mRNA, remember mRNA had never been used before, okay? It was a whole new thing. Anyway, in the countries which had a lot of mRNA, like Australia, there has been an increase in deaths of 10 to 20%, okay? Now, that's a lot of people. Now, you'd actually think after a pandemic, in the past, the fatality rate drops off a few years after the pandemic because the pandemic, if it was a real pandemic, COVID wasn't a pandemic, but in a real pandemic, the amount of people that dies increases because of this virus or whatever. And it's usually older people. And so that sort of brings forward a few deaths. And there's a bit of a lull afterwards. What we've seen after COVID is there's been an increase in deaths. So it absolutely needs to be investigated. Now, it's absolutely scandalous that the Labor Party and the Greens, five times in a row, voted against having an inquiry into seeing why there's an unusually large number of Australians dying. Okay. Now, why is that? Why would they be up for that? Well, because they're so invested with the big pharma these days. It wasn't long ago the Greens used to be really skeptical of big pharma, okay? And I was skeptical of their skepticism, okay? But they were right 10 years ago. But now they've just, I think the Greens have looked at this because they're basically communists, the Greens, most of them. They basically love the idea of a big bossy state. And so if we can boss people around in the name of, you know, vaccines, vaccines, then they'll say, oh, that's a good idea. Any excuse to boss people around and have a bigger government.
Yes.
Let's now I'll tell you, there is a, I've got a concern with this inquiry. Look, hats off to Senator Babette and Rebecca Barnett, who I agree is a magnificent journalist. This is a problem which hasn't got much attention. The committee it's been sent off to is chaired by a Labor Party person, and the deputy chair is a Green. Okay.
Oh,
so now I don't think Babette is actually a member of that committee, but I'm hoping, I don't know how it works in Canberra, I'm hoping he can sort of sit in on the meetings and treat it as though he was a member, but may not have voting rights. But anyway, we've got a Senate inquiry into excess deaths, and I will be very interested to see what it is. Now, it may not be the vaccine. I'm 50-50 on whether it's the vaccine. It could also be that for 2 years they locked us all in.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't go to the doctor like they normally would have, and they didn't detect early cancers. It could be that. You know, and detecting all sorts of other things. Okay, so for 2 years people didn't go to the doctor. So we've got this problem with excess deaths. I want to know why it is. I mentioned it in my maiden speech. Yes, this is a big deal. So I'm 50-50. It could be the vaccines. It could be the extent, the hangover of lockdowns.
Or it could be a bit of both.
Could be a bit of both. But either way, Chris, it's caused by COVID mania, overreaction to a bad flu. Either way, it's caused by that.
That's a very good point. But just to think that we wouldn't want to find out this mystery is just blinkered. It is just a conspiracy. It is just a cover-up of mammoth proportions. Why wouldn't you just find the truth if you are so convinced that there's not a COVID vaccine factor involved in this? Well, find the truth and prove your point.
Yeah, that's right. Somebody told me it's the equivalent of a jumbo jet crashing every day in Australia, the amount of excess people that are dying. If we had one jumbo jet crashing every day, yeah, that'd be pretty big news. It is a world first as far as I know. Let's have an open inquiry. And I hope the Labor Party can have a constructive approach to this whole thing. It's good that there's been a fair bit of media interest in it. We should never let the public forget for the next two generations that Labor and the Greens did everything they could to stop the public knowing about why there's been a large increase in deaths in this country.
Yeah, shame on them. Shame on them. All right. I want to talk about transgender issues. There's almost a story a day we could highlight on this subject. But this week you posted a picture of a soccer team in Sydney, and you wrote, "The Beryl Ackroyd Cup is the female pre-season soccer competition in northwest Sydney. Over the past weekend, this team, the Flying Bats, including five trans women, won the grand final 4-0. What are your thoughts on that?"
The Flying Bats was established in the 1980s as a lesbian team in northwest Sydney, female soccer team, and they love their soccer.
Okay.
And what has happened over the last sort of 10 years is that a number of trans individuals have come along and said they'd like to play soccer. And now in that Flying Bats team that won the pre-season grand final last week 4-0, they've been winning games, Chris, sometimes 10-0. Okay. Their goalie is a trans person, and their highest goal scorer was also a trans person. So now what's happened is the other female soccer teams in northwest Sydney have become unhappy about this.
As you should.
A lot of parents have been saying, I don't want my daughters to play against this team. Some young lady had a collision with one of these trans players and she's got a broken leg out of it, okay? So it's not just about sportsmanship, it's about, you know, being fair, it's about personal safety. Now, I've got some breaking news for you, Chris.
Mm.
2 weeks ago, several of the other clubs in this competition got together informally and they said, why don't we all agree that when we're rostered on to play the Flying Bats, that we'll boycott, we just won't play. because it's dangerous. Okay, that's not fair.
Yeah.
So the other teams, I'm not sure if it was all of them, but it was certainly most of them, said, yeah, we've all agreed we're just not going to play the finals. Then when Football New South Wales heard about that, they called a meeting last Wednesday, of which I have the audio file. It goes for an hour and a half, and I'm just working through it today.
Right.
And in that audio file, well, firstly, we have a father get up and say, look, I've got a daughter with two broken legs. And then they say, the administrators say, look, if any team boycotts the Flying Bats, we will expel those players and we will take them to the Human Rights Commission for expelling them.
How dare they take that approach when all around the world right now, the trajectory is heading the other way, where sports codes are waking up to the fact that this is an unfair contest.
Exactly right. The international trend is against this sort of radical transgender agenda. And, you know, and what we saw last week in the New South Wales Parliament, the Labor and the Greens, they just rammed it through. It's now a crime in New South Wales to try to offer counselling to somebody who's not sure if they should become trans. Okay, well, you should be able to get some counselling, but no, you can't now. And they rushed it through. So, look, I believe the Flying Bats thing is to, look, I don't claim to know what the answer is about what we do with trans players who want to play soccer. Okay, but that's not my problem to sort out. They can go and sort that out themselves. Mm. But I do think that it is pretty outrageous that these administrative officials are threatening these young women who just love their soccer. They like being athletic, you know, hanging out with their friends, playing a good, nice game, getting threatened with going to the Human Rights Commission because they are reluctant to play this team. So, I will let you know when that audio is. Hopefully, I'll be getting it out today or tomorrow.
Yeah, well, 100% of those transgender women in that team went through puberty as boys. They were able to gather a physical advantage when they grew up because of their adolescence. And this is why it is unfair. It's an unfair contest. And this is why you've got a player with two broken legs.
Yes. And you know, the public don't know about this. This is happening. It's happening at the grassroots level, so the people affected know about it.
Yeah,
but and very upset about it at the local level. Yeah. This, I hope, this is the message is starting to get through to people. Look, you better start to pay attention to politics, because if you don't, eventually politics will come for you,
yeah.
And it will hurt your private life. So we've got to fight back against this stuff, and that's what we're trying to do.
Good point. Last subject, let's go to the United States. Independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has named attorney and tech entrepreneur Nicole Shanahan as his running mate at a rally in Oakland, California. Now, Shanahan, John, correct me if I'm wrong, is a key to raising donations here because she's a wealthy 38-year-old, previously married to Google co-founder Sergey Brin. Maybe the first donation could come from her own purse, do you think?
Well, you know, during the Super Bowl, the most expensive ad TV advertising in the world is halftime at the Super Bowl. Mm. And the Kennedy campaign put up this, what I thought was a very good video, and that was just personally financed by Miss Nicole Shanahan. Now, good on her for getting involved in politics. Now, I do, you know, I've loved Trump since the 1980s. I like his swagger, okay? I like his attitude before politics, okay? I have a very high regard for Donald Trump, okay? I've stuck with him through everything that's happened. All that said, I actually am in complete awe of Robert Kennedy. I think he is a magnificent human being. Mm. I think he's got a very good character. I think he's highly intelligent. I think he'd be a fantastic president. And he's very, very good on the Ukraine war. He was obviously very good on COVID. Yep. He's changed his mind on global boiling. He used to be crazier than Al Gore on global boiling. But now he says, oh, no, I realise what it is now. It's a Davos plot, and he's right about that. Mm. Okay, so I have a very, very high regard for RFK. Now, I believe he's made a mistake with his VP pick.
Really?
Oh, I do, absolutely. Look, she's 37. She hasn't made any money herself. She's a good-looking woman. She's married the Google guy only for about 4 or 5 years. She's walked away with millions, probably billions. And look, you know, sometimes these people, that have an extraordinary amount of wealth, particularly when they didn't make it themselves, they got it through marriage or whatever, or inheritance. Sometimes these people are very detached from the real world, a sort of very airy-fairy. And they sort of they think they know what's going on in the world, but they're a plutocrat. They're so above us all. And I think when I just seeing her over the last 24 hours, I think she's in that category. Now I think what RFK should have chosen an older figure, someone, a well-known figure, because of the VP, it is important. RFK might die. He might get elected, he might die. Now whoever's his VP is going to be the bloody president of the United States. Okay, so he should have chosen somebody. I don't have faith that Nicole Shanahan could be a president of the United States. I just do not. Okay, I think she'd be bad for the world. I think RFK would be fantastic. I think Nicole Shanahan would be with Kamala, you know, just someone way out of the depth, and it'll be bad for the world. So, but anyway, look, I'll tell you what RFK's. The betting markets give him about a 2% chance of being the next president. I think it's a bit higher than that. They have debates in September. The month before the election. Big deal. The whole world watches the US presidential debates. And it's usually the Republican and the Democrat. But in 1992, there was three candidates. They also had Ross Perot. Now, to get onto that debate stage, I'm pretty sure the rules are you only need to be polling 10%. RFK's doing that easy.
Yeah.
He's typically about 14%, okay, even higher in the battleground states. If Kennedy gets on that debate stage with Senile Joe and Trump, who's Trump, okay, with all of his magnificent positives and if one or two negatives, I accept that. Then you got RFK there. He will be the adult in the room.
Okay? Yeah.
And he just might.
Game on.
That's right. That's right.
Game on. I'll let you go to Dubbo. Thank you so much, mate. You've been fantastic. All the very best and have a great Easter and we'll catch up next week.
Good on you, Chris. Thanks, mate.
Good on you. The New South Wales leader of the Libertarian Party, John Ruddick. On TNT.
It's been said that when someone you love has Parkinson's, you have Parkinson's. The truth is, Parkinson's disease doesn't just affect the diagnosed. It affects everyone who supports and helps care for them. Worldwide, over 10 million people are living with Parkinson's, a neurological disease that affects movement. And with so many places to search for information, it can be difficult to know where to begin. The Parkinson's Foundation has answers. Answers for everyone in the fight. We can help you understand the disease, help you find expert care, give you tips for living a better life, share the latest research, help you find local support, and there's a free helpline you can call. Find your answers and join us in the fight against Parkinson's. To learn more, please go to parkinson.org or call 1-800-4PD-INFO. The Parkinson's Foundation. Better lives together.
Hi, I'm Abel.
I often forget to mention that he's an amputee because Abel will try any activity he can.
My arm helps me with basically everything.
He doesn't see what he can't do, he sees what he can do.
Yeah, okay. This is helping.
The War Amps has just given him the ability to do all the activities every kid can do.
When you donate to the War Amps, you help kids like me. Thank you.
You're listening to Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Oh, so many comments on our chat box on tntradio.live. I wanted to get to a few of them just in reference to those renewable solar panels that were announced today. We're manufacturing in Australia. Isn't that fantastic? Except everything we manufacture will not be as efficient nor at the same price point than the same product sold everywhere else. Seems rather weird. We're creating a fake industry. And you know how Labor governments create fake industries? Is just throw lots and lots of your cash at it to pretend that it's viable. That's what it is. This is fake viability. We've got a government, a fake government. So no wonder they're coming up with fake ideas, with fake viability for a solar panel industry. It's madness. You start to do this sort of stuff and you end up a banana republic because nothing is worth what you're selling it for and what you're paying to have it made. That's the point. And I'll speak with Dr. Alan Moran about this next hour on the program. He has studied and been very, very careful to look at the pros and cons of this area, whether we can manufacture solar panels or not. They've tried it many times before, I might suggest. The Australian Financial Review ran a story on exactly that today. And what we'll do, we'll talk to Alan next hour on the program. But just a couple of comments on these solar panels. Can't even read that name. It's Fat Chung. Wee Fat Chung. Okay. Wee Fat Chung says, aren't those the same windmills that need diesel motors to get going and thousands of litres of oil per annum? Yes. And in South Australia, when the wind doesn't blow, they switch on the diesel motors. What is the point of having renewable wind turbines if you're going to revert to diesel when the wind doesn't blow? Anyway, thank you very much for that. One here from Tony. Tony says, surely Australians cannot be dumb enough to give this clueless Prime Minister Albo another term. All he cares about is selfies and plane trips. He has broken so many promises. You cannot trust a thing the clown says. That was the gist of the article written today in the Sydney Morning Herald. His only hope of winning the next election is that all of these immigrants he brings in vote for him. Well, they won't be allowed to vote in time for early next year, but I'm hearing you. They will sometime. They will sometime. And that's part of the reason why the Labor Party is never worried about how many come in as willy-nilly as they do. Another one here from Alina. Alina says, let's get to the bottom of this problem in Alice Springs. Rather than look at the symptoms and only try and treat a symptom. Well, if you have a curfew, that's treating the symptom. Alina is right. Aboriginal people in the Northern Territory live in very oppressive conditions, and we know what people always do when pushed to the brink of existence. Having said all of that, there needs to be some responsibility taken by elders and parents and senior members of the Aboriginal communities in Alice Springs to keep the youth in line. They can't be encouraged to do what they do. Otherwise, what we should have, no matter what colour they are, they should be put into prison. That is the only option. That is the only option. So just a couple of bits and pieces here, and there are others that are being written as well. Thank you very much for all of that. Now, tomorrow on the program, we're going to tackle in detail something that you have heard in our news for the past 12 to 24 hours, which is the passing of the digital ID bill. Without any debate, the government wanted to pass the digital ID bill. They wanted to formulate their own digital ID bill in conjunction with the rest of the world. They wanted to become the global leader in digital ID legislation. So they got it. So they didn't have a debate. No one had a debate. Coalition MPs were tweeting madly. They're trying to push this through without a debate. That's exactly what they did. Now, George Christensen, the former National Party Queensland MP, has written in a press release a short time ago, yesterday a dark shadow was cast over Australia as the Albanese Labor government's digital ID bills bulldozed their way through the Senate. He's right. That's how they did it. They bulldozed them through without debate. This is how Australia keeps up with the rest of the world as a globalist. Fall in line with what is the going thing, like the WHO amendments. That will be the same case. They'll follow and bulldoze that through as well. But they've done it here with digital ID bills. George Christensen will be on the program tomorrow. I'll give him plenty of time and we'll unpack this comprehensively. So if you've got any qualms about this, and I'm sure you do, you've listened to TNT enough to have those qualms. We've raised the prospect of having no cash, and we've raised the prospect of Big Brother having a digital ID connection to you and following everything you do and watching everything you spend on, where you go. Stop it. Leave us alone. Get out of our lives. So we'll have a look at the digital ID bills with George Christensen tomorrow on the program. The other big news, and we spoke about this with John Ruddick a short time ago, is this inquiry. It's not a full-on judicial inquiry, but it is a Senate inquiry, which is better than what other countries have managed to conjure up. We have been able to have an excess deaths inquiry agreed to, only just, but agreed to nonetheless. And that's all thanks to Senator Babette. So Senator Babette will be on the program tomorrow as well to talk about how he did it. It took him 5 shots, but he did it. How did he get it over the line? And who voted against having a look at excess deaths? Well, we know who, as we discussed with John Ruddick. The Greens and the Labor Party, the government, decided people don't need to know why more people are dying at this time than ever before. Now, if that is not a deliberate cover-up, I'm not here. So Senator Babette will be on the program tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that immensely. The Royal Commission into Veteran Suicide continues, and some significant testimony given today. Now, I just paused then because I can't find the rest of the story, but I'll get to the Sydney Morning Herald right now to try and get the full story. Let's open that and see whether we go. I've got the full story. The Australian Defence Force Chief, Angus Campbell, has unreservedly apologised for failures that have contributed to the high rates of suicide among current and former service members. That should have happened 5 years ago. He's waited until now. The Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide, which was launched in 2021, completed its final day of hearings on Thursday with the nation's most senior military official providing evidence. He says, our people deserve and should rightly expect the well-being, support and care they need both during and after their service, Campbell said in his opening remarks to the commission. I acknowledge that this has not always been the case and has tragically led to the death by suicide of some of our people. He should have said too many of our people. I apologise unreservedly for these deficiencies. You see, it's all well and good to blame, you know, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and all roads are leading to the DVA. There's no doubt about that. But don't tell me that this clown did not know the problems being faced by veterans as they went through the DVA process. So why could he not have gone to the Prime Minister, gone to the minister involved and raised it and kicked and screamed about protecting his men and women much better through the DVA? Now, I don't know whether he did that, but whatever he did made no difference because this has gone on for years. Campbell, who will step down in July, no doubt on a massive pay packet for the rest of his life, after 6 years as Defence Chief, added, Defence is committed and I am committed to doing better. He's known about this for 5 years. We've got examples of this kind of thing happening at the end of 2023. That tells me he has no stomach for change. The Royal Commissioners are scheduled to deliver their final report in September after hearing from around 340 witnesses and receiving almost 6,000 written submissions. Wow, that is a hell of a body of work, isn't it? Asked why the Defence Force's Mental Health and Wellbeing Branch was not established until last year. A lot of people don't know this. Maybe we do because we've followed it step by step, but maybe you don't know. So the Defence Force sees these figures over 5 to 10 years and think something's wrong here, they get told by the individuals involved it's about what they face when they go through DVA, and yet they only establish in 2023 a mental health and wellbeing branch. I'm sorry, that has got nothing to do with commitment to the cause. That is about protecting your sorry backside. Campbell replied to that question as to why that would occur, and he said, I was keener in terms of time frame for establishment than we necessarily realised. Hello? Is that even English? I was keener in terms of time frame for establishment than we necessarily realised. In other words, I guess he was meaning I was keener for this to start earlier than what they ended up doing. Well, he's the boss of the Defence Force. He could have made it happen. How hard would it be to appoint psychiatrists and psychologists to turn up to a room somewhere in a Defence Force building in Canberra and create an environment where veterans could go and see these professionals to make sure they were able to sort out some of their problems. Come on. What, does it take years, does it? It obviously took Angus Campbell years. As soon as he goes in July, they'll be throwing parties and saying, farewell, don't hit your head on the way out. Dear, oh dear, well, how disgusting. I've got to take a break. We've got plenty more to do next hour on the program, plenty more. We'll also catch up with Dr. Alan Moran as well, and we'll talk about Albo's resuscitation of manufacturing solar panels in Australia. What could go wrong? This is Chris Smith on TNT.